Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. This week, we're actually talking on the phone with one of my idols, actually. It's a guy that's kind of been in the hunting public eye for many, many moons now, and kind of on the forefront of elk calling and a lot of other types of different calls and stuff. I'm sure you probably owned one of his calls at one point in your life, and that's Wayne Carlton. How you doing, buddy?
Good to be here. Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. So I'm not sure if you remember or not, but because you meet so many people, but you pulled me aside like 12 years ago, or I kind of grabbed a hold of you anyway. And you were at a function, I want to say it was Bass Pro Shop opening or something like that. And, you know, I was picking your brain about calling, and you kind of showed me, like, how you can use a diaphragm call to do a bunch of different types of calling and stuff like that. And it kind of laid the foundation for me kind of picking up other different types of sounds I can make with a diaphragm call. And, you know, and ever since then, I've kind of, you know, messed around with it a bit and try to emulate a lot of different animals. And you can manipulate those calls to do a lot of different things. And you were the first guy to ever show me that.
Well, you know, the reason I learned how to make all those sounds was two things, probably. One of them is just the challenge of trying to make those sounds on a diaphragm call. But the other thing is, the more you use anything, the more that your repertoire is bigger than what you're saying, then that allows you to be really good at whatever you say to an animal from many different perspectives. You know what I'm saying? Sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That all makes sense.
Here lately, now I'm older. I'm 73, 74 years old. But I'm having the best success. I'm calling in more critters. For instance, I went to South Carolina turkey hunting this spring. My limit was three. I killed three. Then I called 10 more in for other people.
Nice.
In my younger life, I never could do that because I didn't have the patience to sit. But now, when I'm calling to wildlife, it's like a card game. You show me your hand, I'll show you mine. But maybe I won't show you everything. I'll show you part of mine.
Right.
And I just love it.
That's awesome. Well, that kind of actually leads me into my first question. I'm glad you kind of set the stage for me. I wanted to ask you if you could give me three rules to live by when calling in game. And it could be, you can use anything as an example, elk or turkey or whatever, but there's certain principles that apply to all of it.
This will work on everything you call. Always, always give the animal a chance to make a mistake before you do. Okay, what I'm saying is, you got an animal that's bugling until you say it's an elk, but then it kind of gets quiet. And you're such in a hard spot, you just got to go see what's going on. And you take about two steps, and he's looking down his nose at you. So let me give you an example. I'm going to give you an example. First day of archery season several years ago, West Elk Wilderness, I had three guys with me. That means we had four people, eight eyes, four senses of smell, the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the elk were in there. At least they were 4 or 5 days earlier. And it was the first day of archery season. We are at 12,000 feet, 12,200 to be exact. And I used every call I had, cow calls, mylar reads, diaphragm calls, the whole thing, and nothing would answer. And I just hated like all get out to try to move that herd of people down the side of the hill without making noise. So I gave it one more try, and I really laid into the fighting cow calls, real high pitch, aggravated. And so help me as I sit here on this little chair on my back porch. All this bull did was, but it, at 12,000 feet, it rang across there like the dinner bell. We slipped down on him, closed the distance down, got everybody set up, and while I blew the fighting cow call, he answered me halfway through my call. So I continued to call because I didn't want him to think I was bashful or anything. So I continued to call. That bull came in within 17 yards, had 8 feet of spruce tree across his rack, and he got shot at 17 yards.
Wow.
The first setup of the year. So always make them, let them have the opportunity to make a mistake first. That's number one. Number two, when you're calling, no matter what it is, and this works on turkey, especially in elk, the intensity of what you say means everything. In other words, you can be just general in your conversation like you and I are now, or we could be screaming at each other. Or better still, let me just blow an elk call here, and I'll give you an example. Here's a lackadaisical bugle. Now here's the bugle that means everything, and that the bull's trying to prove a point. So that bugle, that would call in guiding outfitter.
Yeah.
that'd be what I call my guiding outfitter call.
Yep.
They come in.
You're not the first person I've heard say that. That it's more about not the intensity, but the purpose behind the call, what you're trying to say as opposed to what you're saying.
All right, so here's what I'm going to say to help the conversation with that bull. I want to be bugling him with a high-pitched bugle, which puts me as an adolescent bull with a big mouth. And you got an old salt down there. You got an adolescent 13-year-old kid just will not shut up. And I'm going to go up there and his butt come heck or high water. That's what I want to happen. I want him to hear this call that I'm using, which is high-pitched bugle, and I want to make it intense enough that he has got to come see what's going on.
Makes perfect sense.
So how do you do that? How do you do that, Reed? Let me just give the folks that are listening. We've got a call that we call the RIPIT, R-I-P-I-T, RIPIT.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a new thing. In this day and age, to get a patent on a diaphragm call is absolutely ridiculous. But I was able to do that. This is a patent-pending call, first year on the market, and that's what I was just using. You can do that with a single read, which, again, that means your tone of your bugle is high-pitched, adolescent sounding. It's not that deep. It's not that stuff that's going to win you a contest, but don't call in a lot of bulls. So I've allowed myself to make a call that creates those real, real high pitches and stimulates instead of running things off. So here's a cow call on the same reed right here.
Mm-hmm.
hear how small that sounds?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like a younger cow for sure.
There you go. So that's what we're thinking nowadays. Let them make a mistake first. Don't walk yourself to death. Get all your walking done early in the morning. You cannot beat the sun up. So just try to be somewhere where when the sun comes up, you're in the right position. Mm-hmm. If you're not in the right position, then you try to outrun the sun, and it does not work unless you are big and bad. And then you're going so fast that you scare a lot of critters.
Yep. Is that that call's already available to purchase, or
you can get it through Sportsman's Warehouse right now.
Okay. All right, cool. I might have to go pick one of those up. I leave in 7 days for my first elk hunt, although I don't know how much calling I'm going to be doing because they're obviously not really in the rut yet. But
oh, yes, they are. Where are you going?
I'm going to Utah.
Okay,
I'm
they're
going to Utah, Central Manti.
Let me ask you this. Here you are, a young guy,
mm-hmm.
going on the first date. Now, here's the bull just on his first cow call of any substance for a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's that time of year that everybody's thinking the same thing and nobody's saying nothing. If you set up, in a logical place where they want to come, go through all of your calls, create an elk fight, rake the tree. If you will hang loose there, if you can find, here's the deal. Find an active wallow that first week of the season and get there and do your calls, do whatever you want to. I plan on about 2:30 for the first one to show up. They don't wait till dark. They come early.
Nice. Okay. I will try it.
Go ahead.
The reason why I chose this unit to do that in the earlier part of the season, because it was very glassable, and I figured I was just going to hunt them more like deer. You know, I wasn't going to leave my calls at home for sure, but, you know, just in case I wasn't going to have any activity or I'm not the greatest caller there is to be had anyway, you know, but I set it up that way knowing that I'd give myself a chance either way, even if they weren't responding or whatever. But you're the second person that told me to definitely give it a try. And that you could have really good success really early on like that. Just with the same mentality that you said, is that they've been waiting all year long and you know, they're eager to get in the game. So if you speak the right language to them, they're going to come.
Well, the second largest bull I have ever taken, I killed on the first afternoon of the first day of my hunt in New Mexico. So as soon as the velvet comes off those antlers, they're out for business. They're going to try each other. They're interested in fighting with one another. Now it's not velvet. It's hard antlers raking against each other. Every day that the sun goes down a little quicker, their romance starts building, the rut starts going into place. And I'd be honest with you, that first week of the season, for those of you that they have to hunt that time, make it enjoyable. Find you a nice wallow, get you a tree stand, get all your calls worked out, and get in there and just give them a chance to come and see you. You will be surprised.
I'm definitely have to give that a try. That's why I had you on. I wanted to pick your brain before my hunt.
Well, you're picking my brain. I don't know what kind of toothpick you're using, but I hope it's working.
I get this question thrown at me all the time, and I feel like it's so area specific and so more so time of year specific, but people always want to know what my favorite elk sound is or what my favorite elk call to use is. Like, what would you say is your most killingest or most deadliest call that you use?
Well, it's going to be the rip it call, the one I just demonstrated, but it's also the fighting cow call.
Fighting cow. I've never experimented with that at all.
Okay, with that. See, folks, there's a lot of calls out there that all make similar sounds, but there's very few out there that make a sound that has an edge to it, one, something that rattles your ear. And you're trying to do a, and you, again, it's intensity of the call. So here you got two cows fighting. They're standing on hind legs. They're pawing at one another. They got a lot of body movement going on with their chest and their gut. And they're just, instead of just going, they're going, it's more that kind of a sound. And you create that pitch. So I would say the riff is going to be a great, great call. The fighting cow call, or what we call it in our line, is a mini mouth, M-I-N-I, mini mouth. What comes with that is just the opposite, and it's called the loud mouth. It's a very loud, obnoxious bugle that you would never think of using, but boy, does it ever crank them up.
Cool. I was actually just kind of looking right now, see, looking at the calls that you're, as you're telling me, I'm just kind of perusing them. I might have to make a quick order over here. So
if you could, and try to be as specific, I'm gonna set the stage for you. Try to be as specific as you can, and I know we're gonna try to paint a picture with words here because we're not doing this with video, we're not doing this in real life. And so it's the rut. There's bulls bugling. They're starting to round up cows pretty heavy already. Walk me through the typical elk hunting day of Wayne Carlton. What when you drive up in the morning, what's the first thing you do when you get out of the truck? And just walk me up to your final stalk and put in an arrow or shooting a bull. Just kind of try to paint the picture for me. Or you might even use a story and tell us how it happened, how it does.
Oh, okay, you know, so in your word description, you talk about getting out of the truck, driving up to your place you're going to hunt, that kind of. So that tells me you're hunting Arizona or New Mexico in all probability, maybe southern Colorado. But in that type of an environment, I would certainly park. And look here, folks, I hunt public land and I hunt private land. And if somebody wants me to hunt private land, all they got to do is raise their hand and I'll be there. I'm not bashful. So here we drive up to an area that's, you know, we've done some preseason scouting. We have an idea there's a draw over here, or there's some reason for the elk to be there. They like feeding there at night. So I'm going to try to catch them going to their bedding areas. That's first thing in the morning. But here's something that you might also do besides trying to get one first thing in the morning. In other words, when elk start moving, when sun comes up over the horizon, they start moving. And you have a hard time staying up with them. You actually have to do a few wind sprints. And at 73, my wind sprints look more like something with molasses is in it. So what I try to do is know about where I want to be. And I'll get on. So then at that point in time, again, if you're hunting Arizona, New Mexico, or southern Colorado, I'm going to look for some elevated position. You hear a lot more from an elevated position than you will on the ground, or if you're in a canyon or a draw. So I try to broadcast so I can do a 360. I can hear it 360 degrees instead of just in the canyon or whatever. So So what call am I going to use? I'll start off using the fighting cow call, or I may use Hunter Specialty still make this called the Mac Daddy. That is a wonderful bugle for anybody that can't bugle very well. That is a great, great, non-intimidating bugle. So I would try that. I would not do many chuckles because I would, if I got one bugling, I would want to hear the response. And if I'm busy doing a bugle and a chuckle, then I'm missing what the other bull has to say. Maybe I won't be able to pinpoint him exact. So let's say, for instance, we got him bugling. Now we're going to go towards him. Well, I already have the wind in my favor, so all I have to do is walk into the wind. And that takes a little knowing your country. So, but that's the sort of stuff I'm thinking of. Then I want to listen also, is he coming to me or am I going to him? Or are we going towards each other? I literally have passed out going to my position when I was going to their position. And let me tell you feel pretty foolish when you say, well, there he is right there. Why don't we just wait on him?
Yeah.
Don't make him run to catch you. So
goes back to the first thing. You started off the podcast.
Yeah.
Goes off to start the podcast. So let them make the mistake.
Yeah, so everything I say to you folks that may be listening to this is from 40-something years of elk hunting experience. Every mistake a person could make, I have made more than once. But now I'm older enough and I'm patient enough to let's give that another try. And again, for you old farts out there that says, I can't do it anymore, get the whine out of your voice and go get them. It's still there. Now maybe, so we got a bugle, and I'm going to really pay a lot of attention, make sure he's not coming at me. And if he is there anything between me and him that's going to prohibit him having easy access to where I'm at? So here's what I'm going to say. If you want to be successful in calling, be where they want to be before they get there. Now, there's two or three reasons for them to come to that spot. First of all, you're calling. Secondly, they want to come there anyway, which means it was either food or water or security. And thirdly, if they have beat you there and it's in the bedroom area, if there's a guy in the outfitter listening, he'll want to shoot me and break my legs. They don't like you hunting the bedrooms area. But my hunting, the way I do things is about 10:30, 11 o'clock, that is absolutely prime time to go kill a bull because they're where they want to spend the day or else they wouldn't be there. And if they're there, that they feel at ease in being there, especially taking a nap. You can really be successful during the middle of the day. I don't want to give too many tips out here, do I?
Nah, man. You know, I think sharing education and teaching people is a good thing. I used to think the same thing. I'm like, well, if I teach everybody how to do things the way I do it, but I noticed that I get more frustrated with people that are just running around doing all kinds of crazy crap, like driving on their ATVs and stopping and blowing a bugle from the road and then starting the ATV back up in 10 seconds and going, you know, stuff like that. It ends up ruining a lot of what, you know, the hunters that are doing it right are doing, you know?
Yeah, now elk are especially affected by that sort of stuff. And when they add the sound of a vehicle, the slamming of a door, the hunter getting out and coughing, walking down the road, kicking up gravel. Here's a quick little story of turkey hunting. I'm up by myself. A lot of snow where I hunt turkeys in the springtime. So when I'm up by myself, I'm saying something because you can get hurt in that kind of stuff if you should make a mishap. But anyway, I'm up there, and I got a turkey gobbler. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about where I want to go set up on this turkey for him to come out of the tree. Well, I'm about halfway through my thoughts, and I hear, here comes an ATV. And he gets right off and off the edge of where that turkey is, and he got his ATV, he shuts her down. First thing he does is a peacock call. Did a couple of peacock calls, then he did a coyote howl. Turkey didn't gobble. He cranked up his ATV, the turkey gobbled, but he didn't hear it because he cranked his ATV up. The cranking the ATV up actually made the turkey gobble.
Yep.
So he drove on off back down the road, and I killed the turkey after he left.
That's the best. That's poetic justice right there.
That was good. That was a great one.
Absolutely. No, I don't know. It frustrates me. It frustrates me to no end. That's why I kind of rather, you know, guys know what they're doing. Because in the end, the cream is going to rise to the top either way. So I don't worry about the competition so much. Even though it really shouldn't be competition, it should be a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Unified as a group. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, especially when you get into the country, I found it up in Oregon, Washington, and there's a lot of groupie hunting up there. A lot of guys hunt together, good pals. I know Pennsylvania, Michigan, that country is really good for guys as a group to hunt instead of individuals. And you see that out west. And because of where the elk are at, say in Oregon, it's really thick country if you're over on the coast. But there's a lot of. So you don't have to, get very far into what you're blaring about.
I lost you completely.
Okay. What I'm saying is there's a lot of people that hunt in groups instead of individuals.
Oh, yeah.
I see a lot of them on the road, but it doesn't take much getting off the road in over on Western Oregon to be by yourself.
So if you had to hunt one critter for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Wild turkeys.
Turkeys.
The reason being, wild turkeys eat 10 times better than we do. They eat better than we do. They can fly 40, 50 miles an hour. And once you start hunting a wild turkey, he gets extremely wary. But it would be a close, number two would be a very close runner-up to number one. That would certainly be elk.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, they're similar. Like as far as hunting tactics are concerned, anyway.
Yeah, very.
You know, it's that same kind of run and gun. You know, obviously you're using calls. How you're using the diaphragm calls for both of them most of the time. And I think the setups too. You know, if you think about a turkey setup and you think about an elk setup, an ideal. You're trying to draw them into a spot where you can get a shot, you know. So you're kind of looking for like a forced funnel of some sort, or an area where you can bring them into that they're not going to hang up behind something. And it's pretty much I kind of find that with all calling. You know, I learned that with coyote calling more than anything with predator calling. It's like I learned how to be a better caller at all animals because of doing that.
Right.
Because I primarily bow hunt them. I bow hunt coyotes and I bow hunt, you know, predator. And so I really want them to come in a very specific way, and I want them to give me a very specific look. So it's to me. Learning those tactics kind of opened up the door to kind of everything else. Now I just need to get better at making the other sounds, and I'll be all right. I just don't know. I don't practice enough. I need to practice a lot more. My wife hates it when I'm sitting in the house trying to blow my elk calls and turkey calls and stuff. But
especially when their favorite program is on.
Yeah, exactly. I gotta get out there and just do it and get a lot more. I used to be a lot more well practiced, especially elk calling. I used to do it all the time. Like I'd drive around in my truck and just blow away in that truck while I was running my routes and doing things. And I don't do it anymore, and I need to.
Well, we make a living at it, so we do it 24/7.
Yeah. So, well, cool. Do you have any other words of wisdom that you want to pass along to everybody listening to the call?
Just if it comes to elk calling, we kind of went over all the tips, but get the calls, whether they're mine or someone else's, and just get comfortable using them. You and I talked about making different sounds. Just get to the point that you feel very good about using a call and you're not putting it in your mouth for the first time. It's almost like using a GPS first time ever. It's much better to be in the backyard trying to find your way back in the house than
Absolutely.
Take your GPS and now you're trying to find your truck or your mule that's 2 miles away.
Absolutely. No, it makes perfect sense. It's got to be second nature to you because, I don't know, I always feel like when you're in the woods, you don't get that, like, so for me, the first sound that comes out of my mouth might not always sound right. But the second one usually does. And I think you got to get it to the point where, like, it's automatic. You don't need that warm-up try, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, because not necessarily that you're going to spook them away with a ugly sounding, you know, cow call or ugly sounding bugle, because we all know elk make all kinds of crazy sounds out there. You know, not every elk has the same voice. But it's a kind of like a, it could be the situation. I mean, if they're right on top of you and you try to, you know, you try to let out a little cow call or something to get them to stop, and you make a crazy squeak or whatever, they might jump. So I think it's just real important that it becomes automatic and you learn it for sure, and just practice as much as possible.
I would say so.
Your new line, so you were doing hunter specialties for a long time, and now you have your new line of calls, and they're it's called Native, correct?
Yeah, well, Native by Carlton, and the call that I was using earlier, it's called a Rip-It. So you just go on the internet, nativebycarlton.com, and you can pull that stuff up there. Or if you're around Sportsman's Warehouse, they have them.
Cool. I actually just, while you and I were talking on the phone, I ordered one. I got the single black.
All right, the one I'm using is a 1.5. It's a 1.5 reef.
I always have better luck with the single reef.
All right, so while we're talking about that, and I'll let you go, same call. You talk about using them for everything. This, you know, we've already done the cow and the bugle, but here's the same call for turkey. Or maybe you want to do a coyote howl. Same call. And yeah, maybe you want to do a squall. If you get one barking, then squall to him like this. Leave it up to you.
That's actually the call that I learned how to do from you, that the coyote call. Now I'm going to see if I can still do it, because it's been a while. Hold on a second. This is on a turkey diaphragm. This call's a little dry. But, yeah, I learned how to do that from you about 12 years ago.
I hope you have good luck, and those of you that are listening, go out there and give it a whirl.
Absolutely. Well, okay. Thanks for coming on.